Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. Being forgiven puts you under obligation. You must forgive others just as you have been forgiven. That's the teaching of Jesus in a parable. Today, more on the heart attitude we need to have once we experience the forgiveness of God. Stay with us. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Erwin Lutzer is continuing a series from the parables he's calling You Can't Redo Life. Today we turn again to Matthew chapter 18 for another lesson on getting forgiveness right.
True forgiveness leads, or should lead, to a forgiving spirit. Now we get to the heart of the story. Jesus says in verse 28, "But when that same servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. Again, different opinions as to how much it was, but probably somewhere near $100. Tens of thousands of times less than what he himself had owed the king. He found someone who owed him 100 denarii, and seizing him, we even have some violence in this story, he began to choke him, saying, 'Pay me what you owe.' So his fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, 'Have patience with me, and I will repay you.' This fellow servant says the very same thing that the servant had said, same words, 'Have patience with me, and I will repay you.' But he refused and went and put him into prison until he should pay the debt." You must understand the story that in those days there was such a thing as a debtor's prison. You were put into prison, and in prison you were assigned work to do, and all the money that you earned went to the person to whom you owed money. So you could be put in prison, yes, to pay a debt, because you would try to work it off there. There was a scheme that was put in place, not very effective, but that's what was done in those days. Well, we have to back off and ask ourselves this question now. This second forgiven servant, was he wrong in demanding that his fellow servant pay what he owed? Strictly speaking, not. This was a matter of justice. You owe me $100, you ought to pay $100. You don't have $100 to pay, I'm going to sue you, or I'm going to put you into jail until you pay it, because I am interested in justice. Justice was on his side. But here's the reason why he was so wrong. Though perhaps justice was on his side, he had a moral obligation to forgive. It was wrong for him to say that when it comes to God and when it comes to the king, I am willing to receive mercy, but when it comes to others, I am going to demand my pound of flesh. I am going to demand justice be done, because after all, I'm into justice. Well, I'm glad that you're into justice, but you have received so much mercy. Think of what God has forgiven you for, and now you are going to insist in your relationship with someone else that you are going to demand justice. Notice what happens. It goes on, actually, verse 31, when his fellow servants saw what had taken place, they went greatly distressed, and they went and reported to their master all that had taken place. Then his master summoned him and said to him, "You wicked slave." Notice, this isn't just a fault. "You wicked slave. I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. And should you not have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you?" And in anger, his master delivered him to the jailers, or to the torturers, as some translations have it, until he should pay all of his debt. "So also will my heavenly Father do to you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart." There is a kind of forgiveness that is only verbal, but you forgive from your heart. Now, we need to think about this very carefully, because do you see the problem? Are you telling me that God is going to revoke forgiveness that was once given? That's the way this parable is frequently interpreted. That the man, you see, the servant who owed 10,000 talents, who couldn't pay, and now refuses to forgive his fellow servant, he is put into the prison until he should pay the debt, namely the 10,000 talents. That would mean that the king actually revoked forgiveness and said, I forgive you, but then went back on his word because the fellow servant wasn't faithful in following through with mercy. That's not what God is like. I'm glad that when God forgives us, his forgiveness is irrevocable. The gifts and the calling of God last. When God says, I forgive you, that is forgiven. He does not insist that we pay it later, no matter what kind of people we've become in terms of our anger and bitterness. Let's look at this verse again and interpret it differently, all right? Verse 34, and in anger his master delivered him to the jailer until he should pay all his debt. Well, obviously he can't pay the debt of $10 million. We've already granted that. I think that the debt that is being referred to is the debt of extending forgiveness to the fellow servant. And so what's really going on here in the text is not that the king now expects him to pay the 10,000 talent, but the king says, I'm putting you into prison until the debt which needs to be paid is forgiveness to the person who owed you 100 denarii. And having been forgiven much, you will be in prison until you stop insisting on justice and begin to insist on mercy and forgive. Also, keep in mind that we're talking about here in human relationships. We're not necessarily talking about eternity, and it is always a little dangerous to take a parable and then to use it in such a way that it contradicts other passages of Scripture. So that's why I think this interpretation fits much better to the context. What he's saying is if you do not forgive, you will be put into a torture chamber until you are willing to forgive. One time I was listening to WLS radio in the morning, Don Wade and Roma. Apologies to Moody Bible Institute station. And Roma read this, which she wrote. I was so impressed with it that I contacted the station, or my assistant did, and I actually got it. This is what she said. Do you harbor resentment? Then you are poisoning your own meal at life's banquet table. Imagine your mind as a little shop of horrors, a kind of museum filled with relics of all the injustices and the harm you've ever endured. Each exhibit depicts your memory of what someone did or didn't do that hurt you. Brightly illuminated by your resentment, every exhibit has a soundtrack echoing with loud, angry, and accusing voices. The walls are covered with horrible instruments of punishment and the long list of penalties to be inflicted on your wrongdoers. And coating everything is a thick, clinging residue of self-pity that keeps you from moving along to the new future wing of your museum, where exhibits are filled with pleasure and joy and new possibilities. Can you imagine what it would be like to be locked permanently inside such a chamber of horror and hate and resentment? If you are unable to forgive others, real or imagined wrongs against you, then that horror chamber exists within you. That chamber of ill will is in your own mind and soul. And what a price you pay for maintaining such a museum of resentment. The negative reliving of your past strokes of anger, resentment, and seething hostility. It also turns your mind against itself. It is like poison to your soul. The simple, profound truth is that the entire horror shop crumbles if you're willing to forgive. By forgiving others, you forgive yourself. You gain a new sense of self-esteem and free your own spirit to soar to new heights. There is no time to waste. Now is the time to stop the pain of the past from poisoning the joys of your present and your future. Decide to forgive. Some of you are in that torture chamber. You have been handed over to the torturers until you forgive the person who has wronged you the most. And you see, when we continue with resentment, when we continue to be committed to resentment, then what happens is very clear in our minds and hearts. We become a servant, basically, to the person who wronged us. And that's why number four is true forgiveness leads us out of our personal prison of resentment and hatred. Let me ask you something. The person who has wronged you, controlling your life now because of resentment, you cannot sleep. And whatever you do not forgive, you remember, you pass on to others. Your anger is evident to your children. It's evident to those around you. And even though you deny it, it is very clear in all of your relationships. Do you realize that that person who has hurt you enough? And the only way to be free from that hurt is to choose to lay the bitterness down. You must do that, or you're in a torture chamber of your own horrors. There is a fifth truth that I'd like to make about true forgiveness, and that is that true forgiveness is really a choice. It is a choice. It may not be explained explicitly here in the text, but it is there. The man who is in the torture chamber, he can choose to forgive. Here is something that I believe is so devastating to many people. Many people take the point of view, I will forgive when I feel like forgiving. And then they define feeling like forgiving as once the hurt begins to subside and the hurt begins to stop, then I am ready to forgive. Fact is, the hurt never stops, especially if you keep it alive in your mind by resentment, which is really sweet poison. You think to yourself all the different ways that you would like to use to get even with that person, and these ways well up within you, and you imagine them over and over and over again in your mind, and you're saying, someday I'll forgive, but not now, because vengeance is so strong in your soul, and it poisons all of your relationships. That's why the Bible is so clear. We must choose to forgive.
Well, this is Pastor Lutzer, and as I frequently explain, when I speak about forgiveness, I think that there is such a thing as one-sided forgiveness. Some of you who are listening say to yourself, there's no way that I can be reconciled to the person who hurt me. They don't even admit to what they've done. Reconciliation may be beyond reach, but forgiveness, that is to say, the laying down of our bitterness, that can be done at any time by anyone, regardless of the other party involved. So I encourage you to do that today and listen to Running to Win next time as we continue this message. God bless you from my heart to yours. See you next time.
Erwin Lutzer with more of Getting Forgiveness Right, another message in a series from the Parables on You Can't Redo Life. Next time, what it means to say that God will not forgive us if we fail to forgive others. All 10 parts of You Can't Redo Life can be yours on CD, sent as our way of saying thanks for your gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. This is Dave McAllister. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.